for inviting me. I'm really grateful to be here. This makes me have a control on my face. Right, so, well, in this talk I want to convince you that it is basically possible to construct brains out of gate theories in a five-dimensional theory. So I'm going to describe how, by starting with a five-dimensional gate theory, you can end up with several brains in the 5D ball. One of these brains containing the electric model, right? Well, this was intended to be a cosmology talk, but I'm afraid I'm not going to say too much about cosmology. But you're aware that we, the cosmologists, we are very kind to study brain walls, so this is a proposal to approach to a different kind of brain walls that cosmologists are not too used to approach. So much of the people, after producing this piece of work, I found that much of the people working in this kind of things, they usually focus on other kind of issues of this type of brain walls. And so I came out with with an alternative title for this talk, which could be Gate Higgs Unification Brain. Later on, I will try to show you that indeed, from these type of constructions, ultimately we can produce an identification between Gates and Higgs fields in the brain, right? From the point of view of the five-dimensional theory. Right, so let's go straight to motivation. This is mainly the Gates-Higgs unification thing. So the idea is very simple. If we start with a theory in a five-dimensional setup, if we, let's say, for example, we have some four-dimensional slice which is somehow privileged by the setup itself, then the idea is that we could possibly identify the Higgs field with some normal component of the gate field in the five-dimensional setup, right? So this was, as far as I know, this was first proposed by Nick Manton. And of course, this proposal found quite a lot of complications from the very beginning. It was very difficult to produce the right transformation properties for the Higgs in terms of a 5D gate field, right? I'll try to convince later that we can actually bypass these problems by using some new techniques that I guess didn't exist during those years. Yeah. So a second motivation for this work is a later proposal by Rubakov and Chapovnikov. This is the idea that in general, if you have an extra dimension, if you have some hyperdimensional space, and let's say you have a main wall living in this hyperdimensional space, then in general, and this is a general statement, in general you will find that spinor fields living in this bulk will usually concentrate near the brain. And what you find concentrated near the brains are going to be chiral fermions, right? So this is a very general statement, which I will try to prove now. For this, I will use a very simple formula. This is probably the most simple formula that I could choose in five dimensions. So let's say we have a five-dimensional space and some spin half fermion and some bulk scalar field. We have here a very simple gradient for this system. There is nothing truly strange here. We only have we have the spinor field part, we have a Yukawa grouping between the spinor field and the scalar field. For the scalar field, I'm choosing aquatic potential, which is what we are very used to work with, right? So remember, this is in five dimensions, and we have to choose a few conventions about these extra dimensions. So capital index will be indexing all the whole space. And I will choose the coordinate z to parameterize the what is going to be eventually the extra dimension, right? I'm choosing the Gamer matrix to be in a basis where we have this very simple form, right? It's just the Daylor real form for the gamma phi matrix. So you may all know that the system admits a Kinney solution, right? So if we, for example, privilege the z direction, then the Kinney solution is basically going to look like that. This is just the scalar field going from one vacuum to the other, both at minus infinity or plus infinity in terms of the z coordinate. And of course, we can define here the position where the scalar field cross zero is we can define the existence of a domain one, right? So basically, the scalar field has some energy density which is concentrated here in the position z equals zero. So we have a brain there, yeah? Now, what we want to do is to understand what is going to happen with the spinor field. They are going to be interacting with the domain wall by means of this Yukawa grouping, right? So observe that by means of these solutions in the five-dimensional step, we are basically breaking the translational invariance in terms of z, right? So we have all the right to define left-handed and right-handed pieces for this spinor field. This is just a product of having broken the translational invariance in terms of the z direction. Well, having done this decomposition for the spinor fields, we can now find solutions to these Dirac equations, right? So solutions to these Dirac equations look like this. These are, well, I'm not saying this explicitly in this transparency, but this is going to be basically the zero mode for this spinor field. In general, Huygens modes are going to be massive, so we can integrate them out, hopefully, in a safe way. But that's not really a problem. We can always choose the mass of these massive modes to be high enough to not create problems to what we want to find later as the 4D effective theory. Yeah. So this solution is quite interesting. Let me explain a little bit a few conventions here. I have defined there the four-dimensional part, which is only dependent on the coordinates, the 4D coordinates. So the 4D coordinates are these labeled by this x. Yeah. I have a normalization factor in front of all the solutions. So this normalization constant can be chosen quite arbitrarily to satisfy this normalization condition here, right? So we have all the right to fix this condition. And finally, observe the presence of this exponential factor. In the exponential factor, we have basically the presence of the domain wall, right? And the most important part probably is the presence of these signs, which so it would be, for example, a minus sign if it is a left-handed piece for the spinor field, or a plus sign if we have the right-handed part of the solution, right? So it is quite quite interesting solution. What we have here is that at least in this very basic toy model, at least in this very basic setup, only one of the solutions, only one of these right-handed or left-handed part is going to be normalized, right? So for example, let's say that the Yukawa grouping is positive, then only the left-handed fragment is going to be normalizable. Otherwise, the right hand fermion is going to be normalized, right? So basically, let's say if we have that the left hand fermion is normalized, the right hand is going to be somehow pushed to infinity, and it's not going to press present in the at least in the brain, right? So the only physical state here is going to be the left hand part. So this is a nice picture of what is going on. We have the stellar field there, we have the domain wall, and we have the wave packet representing the fermion field, which is going to be somehow concentrated near the domain wall. In general, we can also compute the width of this wave packet, which I call the delta, and also in general it's going to depend on the parameters of the theory in some particular way. And I'm not really concerned here the way in which it's dependent, but you can compute that. Yeah. And if you want to go further, you can also compute the effective 4D theory. For this particular setup, it's going to be a massless a spin of field. It's going to be a left-hand spin of field. Remember that we are choosing here the case of the Yukawa problem being greater than zero. And even more, if you want to push this width to going to zero, then you're going to have a thin grain solution in the ball, right? So all in all, this is a nice way to obtain brains. It's slightly different from the kind of brains we often study. This is what people call domain wall fermions, and well, there's still much study anyway, so you can find much more of them in the literature. Something really interesting about this domain wall fermions is that, let's say you start with a spinor field in the 5D setup, which is massive. Then you may ask what is going to be the effect on the 4D theory. And well, you can compute again the zero solution to the left equation. It's going to look, this time it's going to look like this. And the effect of introducing a mass in the original spinor field is going to be basically to shift the position of the wave packet at which the fermion localized by some specific amount, right? So the specific amount here is labeled by z0, z0, and is going to be given by this quantity, right? So again, if you now want to explore what happens if you push the width going to zero, then basically the this shift is going to tend to zero again. It's coming quadratically in terms of that. Also interesting is the fact that if you compute now the effective 4D theory, it's going to be again just a massless theory for this spinor field, right? So it doesn't matter if you started with a massive theory in the 5D ball, you will end up with brains containing only massless spinor fields, right? Chiral spinor fields. Right, so that was the basic toy model I wanted to introduce to justify what I said at the beginning about domain walls. And of course, many questions arise from this type of models. And so I have chosen to focus in a few questions, which of course were appealing to what we wanted to obtain at the end. And, so a first question would be, for example, do we have any similar mechanism to localize gauge fields, not only spinor fields in the brain? Basically, the answer is no. Similar mechanisms are not very good, but there are alternatives, and I'm going to introduce later an alternative to localize gauge fields. It's not introduced by me, this is produced by other people. A second question will be if we can reproduce an interesting structure of these constructions, namely if we can basically reobtain the standard model structure. So hopefully the answer will be yes. Well, that's the subject of this talk. I want to convince you that the electric model structure will be something that can come out of this type of 5D confinement. If the second point is possible, then do we have any specific predictions coming from this type of constructions? And finally, do we have any possibility of explaining in an alternative way the hierarchical, if we can solve it? So those are the questions I would like to focus on for this talk, and for the rest of the talk, I will first of all say a little bit more about domain world fragments. I will later on talk about the localization of gauges. This is what people have called the quasi-localization of gauges. And finally, we'll show how to proceed with the construction of the electric model in the brain. Yeah. Okay, so, if you have any questions, please go ahead.
So, just a question. Have you considered semi-local benefits? So, things which are not topologically stable, but there are reasons for being stable.
Sorry, say again?
Have you seen called semi-local benefits?
Within this type of.
Has anyone considered
this? I'm not sure, really. I'm not sure if what would you mean by semi-local defects in this kind of.
So usually the stability of defects is because there is some kind of topological obstruction when winding them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just the fact that you go, even though you don't have any topology, the gradient energy just gives you the.
Okay. No, I mean. Well, yes. The stability of this kind of models are indeed an issue, and I would say something about that later. Right. So. I think that would be an issue more in the kind of more of an issue in the kind of setups I will talk now, which is slightly different from the tournament, right? So, So the toy model presented is quite simple, and we cannot get really too much out of it. So I will have to introduce more structure in the in this type of construction. So. One of the possibilities we have is basically to enlarge the gate structure of the theory, right? So this time I'm going to give a new setup now with a slightly different topology for the space, right? So now we're going to have a compact topology for the 5D setup, yeah. Let me say immediately that we're going to use this z coordinate to parameterize this compact extra dimension, right? So the size of this compact extra space is going to be L, yeah? And as a Lagrangian for the system, since I'm using SU3, I want to focus on a SU3 theory, I will try to give the simplest possible Lagrangian. So this is basically the same Lagrangian as before. Just the only difference is that now we have a gauge part present in this covariant derivative, and what was before the Yukawa coupling is now going to be just with the intention to generalize this mechanism. It's just going to be a general function of the scalar field. Here are some conventions. These are going to be my gauge fields. If you want to know what is going to be the gauge part of the theory, it's just going to be given by this Lagrangian. So I can't really say too much about this Lagrangian. It's just what you usually define for the gauge fields. Of course, it's important to notice that now the gauge coupling is going to have dimensions of length scale. So but this is, of course, a very important issue if you want to quantize these theories. Yes, these theories, you may know that it's not normalizable. So we're basically forced to introduce some cutoffs for the scales, but that's not a problem. So once we have defined those cutoffs, the theory is perfectly well defined. And this is what is coming out from the previous part, just from the covariant derivative. I just wanted to put it there because it's later on this talk is going to be important to have this part explicitly like that. And I want you to by now to have in mind that at some point I want to decompose these gate fields in this particular way, right? So this is just a decomposition. You can probably guess by now, but I'm trying to decompose it in such a way that we end up with an explicit SU2 cross 1 theory. So this is what we're doing. This is the SU2 part. This is the U1 part of the gate theory. And well, these are other components which will necessarily appear from the composition. You may be worried about that. I haven't included other components that could appear here, but later on I will show you that, that these components are not really important for this realization. Right? So let me continue with describing this theory. These are just the SU3 generators. And observe that I'm defining a scalar field living in the adjoint representation of this SU3 theory. Yeah? Well, I'm going to use the normal language for SU3. I'm going to choose as charges the T3 and T8 generators. For the potential, I would choose also a very simple form for the, which is probably the most simple potential I could imagine for this type of scalar field. I mean, this is just, again, this is just going to be a quartic potential for the scalar field. Yeah? Now, it is important to make an observation that in general for SU3 scalar fields, we can always choose the system in such a way that only phi3 and phi8, having made this decision about the charges, that only phi3 and phi8 are going to acquire a non-zero vacuum expectation. Yeah? So this is quite easy to observe. This is just by diagonalizing this part in this notation of the scalar field. Yeah? So, well, here you have the scalar field potential. This is the quartic potential, or if you want the Nesting half potential. And, well, in general, solutions to these potentials are, at least the stable solutions are going to be just points in the bottom of the potential, right? So these solutions are going to be, in general, just linear combinations of phi3 and phi8. But we can also find non-trivial solutions to these type of systems. And so for example, here I'm giving one, and this will be a single winding number solution. So this will be a solution one, will be a loop going by the bottom of the potential. It will not be exactly in the bottom of the potential, but it will be shifted by some quantity there where we have this relation for k, and so you're basically pushing the loop to the border, right? So maybe going back to your question, this is your question could be directed here in the sense that if these kind of systems are, or at least if these kind of solutions are stable or not, right? So the answer is that in general, these are not really stable solutions of this system. They're going to try to decay to points in this diagram here. And we can always arrange the parameters in such a way that this decaying is quite mild you can actually compute how the location of this more stable solution occur, and in general these are going to be at least quasi stable solutions. So this is not such a dangerous setup, right?
Sorry, to go back to the question.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that in general we expect this to be stable because there is a winding number.
So there is a winding number, but basically, okay, let's say you have the brain, right? So basically, I haven't produced the brain yet, but let's say you have this solution in the 5-degree setup. Then you could have some phase transition where the loop going around the bottom will cross this hill and will start mutating by just crossing this hill. Like if you have a loop there, then part of the loop can go to the other side of the hill, right?
It's okay, I'm not understanding. So the winding is not an infinity, it's not a boundary condition.
No, remember that we are working here with compact extra dimensions. So So the nucleation process can be happen, but
so there is actually finite energy for radio.
Yeah, there is a finite energy, right? But again, this will depend on how big is this field. So as the universe expands, you can make this very little. A process without too much importance for the stability of the whole system. Yeah. Now, okay, so we can repeat all the steps as I did before with the toy model, and basically you can compute the zero bound solutions, right? So they're going to look like this. Yeah. So again, you have left and right handed solutions which are going to be somehow split, and this time now the exponential factor, which was before having a Yukawa coupling here, where it's now going to have this extension of the Yukawa coupling I wanted to introduce, right? So remember, this is the Y coupling which appeared before here in the event, right? So the Y coupling there is now going to be present in this part, right? But the important thing is that we still have this splitting between left and right handed part of the spin of it, yeah. And now you may wonder where are these spin of fields going to be localized in the extra space. So the answer is quite simple. Basically, whenever this coupling has a root, then you will have one of these spin of fields localized in the extra space. Yeah. So it's a very simple way to decide where your brain world frames are going to be localized in the extra space. We can basically parameterize the extra space by phi 3 and phi 8 and finally decide where in the extra space are going to be localized. We can also decide whether left-handed or right-handed components are going to be localized in these different pieces, and that will depend basically on the derivative of this coupling. Now, well, it would be helpful to see some example of this. Yeah. So this is basically the most simple example that we're dealing with this type of setup. Let's say, for example, we have this Y coupling represented by a Yukawa coupling, right? So we have a Yukawa coupling there. It's linear in the scalar field. And let's ask ourselves, for example, what is the effect of this Y coupling on the fundamental representation of SU3, right? So this is just the three, right? So we have three components. So to explore what happened with each one of the components, we will have to analyze the way in which Y is acting on each one of the components, right? So let's pick, for example, psi 3, which is one of the possible components we could worry about. And well, if you let now y act into psi 3, then you will find this following form of the in which this matrix is basically acting on psi 3. Therefore, you can decide where the brain is going to be localized in the experiment, right? So I told you that the roots of y are telling you where the fermions are going to be localized. And in this case, the roots are going to be telling you that this wave packet is going to be localized at z equals 0 and kz equal pi, right? So we're going to have the compact space, we're going to have the one of the left, let's say the left-handed piece is going to be localized at z equals 0, and the right-handed piece is going to be localized at the opposite part of the, right? So in this case, we're not killing the other component. Is basically just pushed to the other side of the extra space. Yeah. So both spin fields are going to be physical in this type of stuff. Yeah. And well, of course, you can compute the confinement answer. This is the width of the wave packet, and it's going to be of that. Yeah. That's only if you want to compute. So this is a picture showing you more or less what is happening with the confinement of this is just repeating what I just said, that for example, the right handed piece is going to be localized at z equals 0, and the left handed piece is going to be localized at L half. Yeah. Now, okay, a few interesting things to observe of this is that, of course, we are somehow breaking the Swiss-Swiss symmetry. Yeah? So if we compute the 4D Lagrangian for the 54D Lagrangian for, let's say, the right-handed piece, you will find out that not all of the gauge components are really coupled to these spin fluids. In this particular case, only one of the gauge fluid is going to be looked at. In this case, the E8 component, right? So what we have done is to is basically to introduce a way to break the gauge symmetry by having non-trivial solutions at the ball. Yeah. So this is, I would say, another way to break the symmetry, which, as far as I know, it hasn't been studied much. Yeah? So just for later convention, you can define here an SU1 current coming out of this here. So this theory would be a U1 gauging by theory. Okay, sorry about that. Right, so okay, so that was again some sort of toy model. It was a little bit more complex, but still not good enough to give the structure we want to take out of this kind of brain walls, right? So if we want to obtain the standard model in the brain, then we have to still introduce a few more ingredients. So up to now, this is what I could come up with. This is basically to retain what was before the scalar field and to introduce a new scalar field, in this case theta. Yeah? So now we have two scalar fields, both living in the adjoint representation of SU3, right? So sort of annoying to have to introduce a new scalar field, but well, why not? And because we don't want to make things too complicated, then let's just introduce the simplest possible potential for this new scalar field. So it's going to look like it's again going to be a part potential. And now for Y, for the Y coupling. Remember, the Y coupling is what appears. This is what is coupling the spin fields with the scalar fields. It's going to be a bilinear function of these two scalar fields, right? So I guess this is not really complicating things too much. Okay, you have two scalar fields, and well, let's say that the coupling, the Yukawa coupling, is going to be the most general bilinear form in terms of these two scalar fields. Of course, what I have here is not the most general form possible. Then. It's obviously it is not. But these are the terms I need to produce what I want to obtain at the end. So I just arbitrarily chosen to show these three terms. But if you want, you can put the most general form for this coping, and I can assure you that it will work as well. Right. So this is just to make this presentation more clear. That's all. Right. So I will only focus on these three terms. Out of all the possible terms that you could include in this construction. Right, so these are charges you could define in this coupling. So let's say this would sound quite ad hoc for the moment, but later it will make sense. Let's say that this P charge that appear here is going to be 1 if Y is acting on the 10th representation for fermions. And let's say that P is equal to minus 1 over 3 if Y coupled to the 6th representation, right? So this looks quite complicated, but I hope this will make sense later on when I show you how it actually happens. Yeah. Finally, well, another assumption I have to make is that let phi to have the same solution I introduced later. This is a single winding number solution. I just shown before. And let's say that theta has a more stable solution, which is just of this form. It's just proportional to T8. Yeah? So this is one possible solution out of this potential. Right, so here goes an example. well, this is not really, really an example, this is the real thing in this model. So we want to see what happens if we allow the Y grouping act on the tenth representation of SU3, right? So remember that we have to choose the P charge to be equal to 1, yeah? The truth is that we allow all the values, this will not really confine the electrode model, so we have to choose P equal to 1 to obtain the electrode model. And let's say that this specific combination of values are greater than 0, yeah? So what happens if the Y coupling is acting on this tenth representation? Well, you will end up finding that only these four states out of the 10 states belonging to this representation are going to be confined to the brain located at Z equals 0, right? So, you might already have discovered that this is what I later on I'm going to identify with the usual electrode model. This is going to be the right hand part of the electrode model for leptons. This is going to be the left handed double for leptons. And quite inevitably, I'm going to have, we're going to find this new piece, which is a left handed component for what I have called here an M field, which is what? Then goes here for neutrino because I couldn't associate it with anything else. So let's say we have a new left-handed neutrino, which is going to be somehow a partner of this other common electronic part, right? The important thing to notice here is that this theory, which localized to the Z0 brain, which is what we are trying to construct here, these fields here describe an SU2 plus U1 theory localized at the brain. Yeah. So that's by now what I want you to understand out of this bag, that these four components here transform as non-trivial as an SU2 plus U1 theory. Right, so, this is just to show you that what I say is true. This is you can compute the 4D effect in the random, it's going to look like this. And now, if you want, you could ask which components of the gate fields are going to be localized to the brain, at least which components are going to be coupled to this domain world friend. These are going to be the respective components. Yeah. So we're going to have, remember that we, before we decompose the gate fields in these components here. So these gate components are going to appear again in this domain world family. Yeah? Moreover, we are going to have an interaction part here, which is going to be of this form. So there again, we have also the 5D gate field somehow coupled to this brain, right? So of course, this is probably the most interesting part because a priori, you could not anticipate this kind of piece in the Levandin. What we have here is the scalar component of the gate field theory, but observe that the index that appears here is the index which are the non-diagonal index of the gate theory, right? So it is a representation for SU2 cross U1 in a non-trivial representation, right? So of course, this is what I want to identify later as the Higgs field. If we're lucky enough, right? But at least the coupling is the right one, so indeed we can identify the Higgs field. And we have a new part here, which is a vector field, which is obviously not found in the southern one, so we should be worried about this part, and well, I will tell you more about that later. Right, any questions up to you? Okay, so, well, this is what I have to say about constructing the electrode brain, but of course, this construction is not going to be successful unless we are able to also confine the gate fields on the brain. So what I want to do now is to show a possible mechanism to actually confine these gate fields on the brain. So the argument is quite simple. What we have up to now is the gate field living in the Borg, yeah, so this is the term that I'm kind of describing the gate field, the whole Borg. Of course, this gate field is going to be coupled to the brain by means of this sensor. Yeah? So then we have the gate field, and then we have the current term, which is localized in the brain. So this delta function is basically predicting the brain in which this current lives. And so here comes the crucial observation that these gate currents are not transforming anymore as an SU3 currents, right? So these are not SU3 currents living in the brain. These are, by what I said before, these are going to be SU2 plus U1 currents. Yeah? So why is this so important? It's because basically now we could wonder what happened with loop corrections on the brain arising from this current. So this is actually what is going to localize the gate fields for us in the brain. You could, for example, compute defective theory coming from these corrections, from these quantum loop corrections in the brain, and you're going to end up with gate theory localized to the brain. Yeah. And the thing is that the loop corrections, these currents here are going to be providing the transformation properties for the gate fields at the brain. So if we have, for example, gate currents transforming in SU2 cross 1, then the gate theory that you obtain in the brain is going to be an SU2 cross 1 gate theory. So that's the argument. I don't want to be more specific about this. Any questions? If you basically compute the loop corrections in the brain, you're going to end up with a theory which pretty much looks like this, right? So this is, again, the 5D bulk part of the gate theory. And now, after computing the effective theory of the brain, you're going to have this four-dimensional part, which is containing the, which is describing the gate field of the brain. Well, this is, again, the composition. This is the, this is how the gate field is coupled to the brain. Yeah. This is the effective field.
Just a question. Yeah. If you actually make the brain with some bigger group that contains the electrode.
Yeah, I started with a bigger group.
In that case, you'd actually confine. In that case, like in usual, those are not important. You'd actually confine all the gate groups inside the brain by construction.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I started with a perfectly gate environment theory at the beginning, and only because of these non-trivial solutions.
What I'm saying is, in a really straightforward, which probably doesn't work, a straightforward way to confine the gauge groups, would be to actually make the brain out of the gauge.
You mean in the same way as I did with.
So instead of taking an extra field, a fine field, that's really all the job for you. Basically, starting with some fine group, which is actually an SU fine or SO10 group, which actually is already the right approach to the brain solution. And then all the gauge fields are already on the brain by definition.
I'm not really sure if that works.
Like in Newton, it works here. The big field inside and outside. What if it's all in the field? I'm not sure.
Yeah, so that's work or not? Okay. You have another question?
Well, I was just curious. At least in gravity, if you can look up a similar scenario,
yeah,
body Kapadaze Porati, and the localization is only a quasi localization. So, at very long distances, the theory becomes higher dimensional again.
Yeah, indeed. This is what is going to happen also with this kind of things. Yeah. So, that will be a source of constraint for this type of theories. Although I haven't really explored which kind of constraints will appear from this type of phenomenon, but that's true. It's the same sort of situation. Right, so, let me go back. This is the 5D part, and this is the 4D part, and here I'm just showing how the 4D part looks in the property. Yeah. So the quantum corrections really enter here in the computation of these copies here, which looks pretty much like that. So here we have the ultraviolet and infrared cutoffs in the 5D theory. And, well, the hard part here is to compute these n coefficients, which are going to be, are going to involve all the spinner fields, which are confined to the brain, right? So it's quite a hard work, and basically the hardest part is really to obtain this part, which I have chosen not to to show at all, because it's a horrible expression. But the important thing is that you can compute it. Please observe the new part of the theory is given by this vector field, which doesn't appear in the sum. Okay, so what we have so far is up to now, I've just been concerned with the term representation of SU3, which provide us with the lepton part of the Stoner number. We could now want to obtain the quark part of the theory. This is indeed possible, and for that you have to go for the 6, right? For the conjugate 6. So in this case, the charge that appeared in this Y coupling is going to be necessarily of this form, right? It's going to be needs to be of this value. Everything is very nice because now we also have only a few components of this representative confining to the brain we want to construct, and these are going to be only these four components, right? So this is a right-handed component, a left-handed doublet, and again a right-handed singlet. Yeah. So this is what you can actually identify with the with the quarks in the normal electric pool. Well, let me say something important here. Let me go back. Okay, so because we have used the 10 and the 6 representations, the crucial thing here is that basically the charges in terms of T8 and T3 are what are giving us the right couplings to the gauge fields, right? So this is also very important to notice if you want to obtain the electric model from this type of stuff, right? So you cannot have arbitrary groups making this job for you. They have to be the right groups coupled to the spinner fields in such a way that you obtain these right couplings, right? So the relative relation between these two pairs of couplings is what we want to obtain, the signs also. So we wouldn't succeed if we choose other representations. We have to choose these two representations to obtain the right charges for the quantum numbers. Yeah. Okay. So probably you would like to know what happens with the charge. Up to now, I have only said what happens with the brain localized at z equals 0, which was just an arbitrary. I just chosen to work with this specific brain arbitrary event. It is in general quite interesting because other components of this representation which do not confine to z equals 0 are naturally going to be confined to other positions in the ball, right? So if this is the z coordinate parameters in the ball, then in general we will have more brains. So these brains are going to contain U1 gauge theories. And this is also nice. You will have also an exact copy of the standard model localized at the other side of the compact space. But in this case, the spinner representations are going to have the opposite parameters. Yeah. So that's why I have called this a mirror brain, just because it's an exact copy but with opposite parameters. So it is indeed a mirror brain. Right. So having said that, okay, let's work now under the assumption that this normal component of the gauge field is indeed the Higgs field, and let's ask if it would do the right job for us. The answer is no. It doesn't do the right job. If you assume that this Higgs field acquire some non-zero vacuum expectation value, then it will happen that the masses of leptons, quarks, and gauge fields are going to be of the same order, right? So this is quite catastrophic in a sense for this model. But this can be solved quite nicely. Basically, the secret to solve this problem is just by generalizing the Y coupling to have to be the most general possible by linear function of the theta and phi. So just by generalizing this Y coupling, you will basically solve this problem. This is just in the same way as if you put spinor fields having masses in the ball, then I showed you before that the masses will produce a shift of the wave packets in the ball, right? So this term here is basically producing the same effect. This will look like a mass term for the spinor fields. And the effect, if we do a zoom to the electric brain, then the effect of this term here would be just to split all the wave packets confining near the electric brain, right? So the splitting of these wave packets in the brain will basically solve the directory problem in a very nice way, which is what I've shown there. Okay, so this is the last slide of the talk. This is a summary. I have presented here, I think, no way to confine the electric model to a brain, or if you understand the model more generally. The nice result is that, especially is that we can basically predict new parts, new partners of for the standard model, which of course haven't been observed, but they are perfectly, in principle, they are not introducing any big problem to theory. We just require this, for example, this vector field to be massive, and indeed it is massive in this version of the theory. Not so nice, of course, is that the whole setup is still quite ad hoc, right? So we have to use two scalar fields leaving the bulk, and we have to use a rather arbitrary setup within this for these two scalar fields. And there are many things that can be done in this kind of constructions, especially the phenomenology involving these two new fields N and B. Thank you very much.
The choice of Y, there was some arbitrariness in it, and you chose the
value in your form. Yeah, the Y coupling is what is producing the confinement for you, right? So, and this is what is basically picking up the right gate theory to be confined to the brain. Right? So, we want to confine an SU2 plus U1 theory to a specific position in bulk, and for that we need a specific Y coupling. So there is an interrelation between the terms appearing in the Y coupling, which is important. It has to be in a specific way. So that's sort of annoying, right? Because you wouldn't like such a specific relation between different terms appearing in the Y coupling. Yeah, well, I can show it to you. It's basically what we have there. So we have these three terms. Remember that we can add more terms and they do nice things for you, so it's not a problem. But the thing is that there are these factors in front of each term which cannot really be made arbitrary. You would like them to be just any value, but they have to be those specific values. But I guess that is not too bad, because that could be probably some signal for something else going on at another level in the theory. So there could be some symmetry going on with these two fields, which probably could indicate that these are the right values to consider. So, but still, I don't have an answer why those have to be those coordinates and other ways. They could be probably then not stable on the relative collections, and that would be very annoying, of course. system.